Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 152 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
On this episode of the Outlander podcast, we are thrilled, tickled, amused, fascinated, everything to have a very special guest. All our guests are special, but this is a very interesting one. We are really, really happy to be able to welcome native Angeleno Anna Halligan. Works in the television industry, and most recently for Fox's Last Man on Earth. And also, you may recognize her face and name being attached quite recently to Starz Outlander. When not working or writing, she can be found performing improv at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater with her team, Tiny Pizza, or on the couch with wine, Netflix, and her calico cat, Zoe. She's currently developing a comedy web series called Half Empty about the tragically hilarious search for love in the modern age. We are thrilled, tickled, and all of the above to welcome Anna Halligan here to the show. Welcome so much. I can't. I just failed. You. What are my strengths and weaknesses? Not intros.
Oh my God. I think she must have a little bit of a girl crush on you, Anna, because she is super flustered.
I'm so excited.
Wait, excited to be here or that I may have a girl crush on you?
Both. You're so flummoxed by me.
Oh God.
I don't have this effect on people all the time.
No, I don't usually have this problem. And I like guys, so what can I say?
She's been Twitter stalking you for
Summer,
like 3 years now. So.
Not Summer. You don't throw that word around.
Oh, come on.
But no, we did. This is going to sound really bad. We did exchange pictures of our kitties.
It's true. We both love cats, and that's important.
Early days before the show. And we were DMing pictures of our cats.
You know, actually, the first time that I met Katrina Balfe, she showed me photos of her cat, and I showed her photos of mine.
That's adorable.
This is like what I do with people.
This is how
I bond.
Oh, well then.
Someone tells me they like cats, and I'm like, oh, you're good people.
Oh my gosh. Totally. Yeah, cats are one of my things.
It's not a superpower.
Cat. It can be.
Cat, not a superpower. Cat animal.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it depends on what you do with them.
Well, then that would be the superpower. A cat in and of itself is not a superpower.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Okay. So, Anna, this is about you.
Yes.
So, what, even though it may not sound like it, a lot of people, as I said, may recognize your name and face from, especially listeners to our show listeners, the Outlander podcast, recognize you from your attachment to Outlander. And we will include that, dear listener, we promise. But this episode specifically is about Anna, and Anna is much more than the time she spent with Outlander, as much as we love that and appreciate it and are going to hear a lot about it.
Yes, so, absolutely.
Anna, tell us in general about your background. Now, that's a huge topic. By that, we mean like your childhood. How did you become interested in performing at all? What type of performing? How old were you? Anything and everything that you would like to tell us about your upbringing.
Well, I did not know that I always wanted to work in TV, but I was raised in Los Angeles. And my father is an actor, and my mom did acting and modeling and dancing. And so we're a very artistic family, and that was a huge thing for us. And I did ballet growing up, and my original dream was to be a ballet dancer. And I actually went away to art school for that, to North Carolina School of the Arts, when I was in high school. And completely burnt out there on ballet. But in the meantime, I was exposed to this sort of wonderland of acting and music and dance and visual arts. And it was really the place for me. And in the meantime, having grown up in LA, I had been very exposed to movies and TV, and I used to go on the Universal Studios tour in Hollywood with my family, and I would see people riding around in golf carts with walkie-talkies, and I'd be like, what are they doing? That's so cool. Can I do that? So when I quit ballet and I went to college, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I did not know what my career would be, but I knew what I liked. And so I double majored in English literature and theater. So those things actually worked out perfectly for eventually deciding to go into TV. I did a lot of plays in college, and I really liked the ones where I got to be funny and not take myself too seriously. And that got me into doing improv comedy. And I did that in San Diego at the National Comedy Theater in San Diego. And it really got me hooked. And I also started writing a lot. I had always written a lot, and it was something that came kind of naturally to me, mostly comedic essays and that sort of thing. And then I was like, wouldn't it be cool if I could work in TV? So I started emailing everyone I'd ever met in TV and asking if they knew of any internships. And one person that I emailed was like, oh, I used to work for Entertainment Tonight. They hire interns sometimes. Call this woman and tell her you were referred by this other guy, and maybe you'll get an interview. So I called and said to this random person that I did not know, which I dicey moral ground there, but I got an interview and I got the job, and I was an intern in the online newsroom. So I was writing articles used on the website for Entertainment Tonight and The Insider. And every day I would pitch like 10 headlines, and they would all be about things that the Entertainment Tonight readers would like Kardashians and Bachelorette and like things I had no knowledge of. And and I like was very pretentious and snobby at the time. And I was like, this is below me. But but I would.
It sounded just like the Kardashians.
Yeah, I know. Below me. I was like, I went to art school. then I was doing well and I was writing these articles, and I discovered that if I put, you know, if I was kind of sassy about it and used my humor, that people kind of liked that. And I was like, actually, this is really cool. They like my writing. Wouldn't it be cool if I could do writing with comedy? And so then the next summer, I got an internship at Conan on TBS. I was an intern for the monologue writers. And that was one of the most forming experiences of my life. I just got around all these really funny, creative, cool people. And I was like, wow, I want to do this. This is so cool. And that was the summer before my senior year of college. And then I graduated from college a year later, once again, emailed every single person that I'd ever met in entertainment and was like, do you know of any jobs? Can I hear about any jobs? Can I get any advice you might have? Because the thing about getting jobs in TV, and this is horrible, but it's very nepotistic, and it's very hard to get a job unless you hear about it word of mouth. They'll post jobs online and you can email them, but you're really just sending your resume into a bin somewhere and no one ever sees it and no one ever contacts you back. And it's very disheartening. So I tried to just reach out to people I knew. And one of the people I reached out to was a former ballet teacher named Laura Bear. And I was like, guess what? I don't do ballet anymore, but I want to work in TV. And I remember you did stuff with that. And she said, my husband, Ira Stephen Bear, is working on a TV show called Outlander. I'll have his assistant, Richard, get in contact with you and ask for your resume. So like 3 days before my college graduation, I spoke on the phone with Richard Kahan, gave him my resume, moved to LA a week later, interviewed twice for Outlander, once with Richard and once with Meryl Davis. And then I got the job and I was like 2 weeks out of college and I was working on a show called Outlander that no one had heard of because it was still like a year away from premiering. It was just given its green light by Stars. And the rest is history.
Holy, 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 everything. Okay, so back in your little Anna childhood, You did you said you did ballet. You did you do theater when you were a child as well?
I did ballet. I sang in two different choirs. I played piano and basically was raised to be like a little Broadway child. Uh-huh. I did go on some auditions because, not because I had an agent or anything. My parents didn't want me to be a child actor, but every once in a while, my dad's agent would be like, oh, here's a commercial and we need families or we need girls. And my sister and I would go, and I was terrible. I was so bad. I would cry. I would get so nervous. I still get really nervous, which is strange. But I remember one time I auditioned for this commercial where I was supposed to pretend that I was shaving my dad's face. And then I was supposed to like feel his face and like feel that it was so smooth and kiss him on the cheek and be like, wow. And
wait, did they actually have you make that sound?
I think that was my creative liberties.
That was actually very cat-like.
Well, my task was simple. I didn't actually have to shave his face. I was just supposed to, you know, go through the motions. But in my child brain, I became convinced somehow that, like, I had this vision of me shaving his face and somehow, like, cutting his throat. It doesn't even make
sense.
That's
a little bit.
She went all Sweeney Todd on
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
I started sobbing hysterically. My dad had to, like, apologize to the casting agents and the producers and, like, carry me out of there. And then I just had to endure, like, an hour and a half drive home with him where I just, like, repeatedly apologized. And he just kind of laughed and was like, it's okay. And then I would do talent shows and stuff. And then I started doing plays later. But I always have been very, very nervous in front of crowds. And when I started doing improv, I always felt like I was going to throw up before every show. And I didn't know why I did it because that seemed masochistic. But I love it. And I love comedy. And I love the live energy. And I love being a part of a team and really building something together. And so now I have my team Tiny Pizza. And we perform in a once-a-month show at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in Hollywood. And other shows just whenever people want us to. And it's so fun. It's so great.
So how do you come up with a name like Tiny Pizza? You just throw words into a hat and pull them out and go, okay, we're going to go with Tiny and Pizza.
It's funny. One of the guys on my team, Ryan, was in a meeting and he was doodling and he drew this little chubby guy eating a slice of a very small pizza. and it said, hold me closer, Tiny Pizza. And he sent me a photo of it, and I was like, that's amazing. And, yeah. But improv teams have the weirdest names. Like, Tiny Pizza seems somewhat normal. But people all the time are like, why Tiny? Like, people like more pizza. I don't know. Tiny things are cute.
We'll leave you wanting more with our Tiny Pizza.
Yes. You won't feel guilty afterwards.
So if you intern on, like, Conan O'Brien, how much do they let you do as an intern? Or are you just fetching coffee?
Oh, my gosh. I was so lucky. They have a ton of interns on Conan. They have probably 25 a summer, or at least they did at the time. And they're in various different departments. And depending on what department you're in, you get to do different things. And I was so lucky that I was in monologue. There were three of us. And all of Conan's jokes follow a very specific format. There's a premise and then a punchline. So a premise would be like, this week in New Hampshire, a woman drove her truck into the side of a Taco Bell after being stiffed a taco. So it'd be something that's like a very real news story. And then there would be a punchline. And I'm not going to think of a punchline because that'd be way too hard right now. But it's like, yeah, you know, like Donald Trump said this, here's the joke. And so our job as monologue interns was to write the premises for jokes. So I'd get in a little bit before 9. I would come up with at least 3 political premises based on the news that day and at least 7 premises just based on random news. And then I would send those to the writer's assistant, who would compile all the best premises from the interns and send them to the writers. And then the writers would add punchlines to the premises. And then those would all be run down to Conan. And Conan would circle the ones he liked, or if he didn't like any of them, just be like, do more. And then the ones that he liked would go in the monologue. And so it was so cool because I was 21 and I was watching the show live tape every single day, and I could be like, that was my premise, and like Conan just said it, and it was so cool. And I also got to be there for rehearsals, which was so educational because it'd be Conan and Andy Richter and the other writers of the show, and they would be rehearsing a sketch and they would say, oh, you know, this doesn't heighten in a way that it should. Or this feels like too many beats and it's like overkilling the joke. And it, for me as an aspiring writer, that was just so educational because I could be like, oh, wow, that's true. And oh, look, it is so much better now. And it was like the best education I could get.
So working with someone like, or working for someone, some entity like the Conan O'Brien show, you said that was where, or just before then was where you realized that you wanted to go into comedy?
I would say I was getting sort of an inkling for it before that because I had liked that so much at Entertainment Tonight, and I started doing a blog and I would write, you know, just like my observations on the world and try to make them funny. And there seemed to be positive feedback. So I was like, oh, maybe I have a knack for this. And then Conan, it was where I was really like, oh, wow, this is cool. I want to do something like this. I didn't know if it would be late night or sitcom or sketch. And then it was funny because then I did end up at Outlander and I was there for 2.5 years, almost 3 years, actually. And that was a drama. And there were times when I was like, am I not in the right place? Because maybe I should be working on a comedy. Not that it's that easy and you get to just choose whatever show you want to be on, but there were times when I was like, oh, you know, Outlander, in a perfect world, you know, they would magically come to me and say, Anna, we want you to write this script right now. And I thought, I'm not good at that. That's not what I'm suited for. And if they said, hey, Anna, write episode 204, I would be like, oh no, I don't know what, you know, like I make jokes and I write sketches and I write funny things, and as funny as Rupert and Angus can be, it's not the Rupert and Angus show. So I worried about that, but at the same time, Outlander being on a drama was so good because I got to see how a TV show is made from conception to a finished product, and I got to see it every step of the way and all the different jobs and really how a writer's room works and that whole process. And that was like grad school for me, and I never actually studied screenwriting, and sometimes that's an insecurity of mine because I'm like, oh, I don't have the technical training. But then I'm like, no, I was in a writer's room for 3 years. I know how a show should be written, even if I haven't taken a class in it.
You mentioned, of course, and you talked about your time on Conan, mm-hmm. and your inclination for comedy. And of course, and you mentioned the few, you mentioned late night, you mentioned sitcom, and you mentioned sketch. Mm-hmm. And of course, you had to know, we were going to ask you, is it a dream of yours to maybe one day write for SNL?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Did you hear that, Summer? Oh, my God. Okay, go ahead.
That would be amazing. I would take that job. I'd take just about any job. I think right now at this point in time, if I could write for any TV show, I would want to write for Inside Amy Schumer because I love sketch comedy and I love that she's a strong female voice in comedy. And I think that that show and Key and Peele are just, which ended, but they're just so good and they're kind of allowed to say whatever they want to say, more so than a lot of network shows. And that really appeals to me because I feel like the best comedy is made when you don't have someone being like, oh, I might offend someone, or, you know, let's appeal to every single human in America. You know, it's like, well, that's probably not going to happen.
Speaking of shows like Inside Amy Schumer and other ones that really maybe not even push the envelope, but like you said, they really don't have too many barriers. They mm-hmm. say what they say what they want, right? Mm-hmm. Have you considered starting your own show? I mean, you have your own comedy troupe, right? You have your own group.
Right.
But have you considered doing something like a podcast or a video cast?
Well, I'm actually starting a web series, so that's kind of
Well, there you go.
My vehicle for that. Yeah. And
you
I'm writing.
Took the wind out of my sails, Anna.
Well, I mean, I write my own stuff on the side. I'm working on a pilot right now. It's terrible so far, but hopefully it won't be at the end. And I'm working and I'm starting this web series. So those are kind of my creative outlets aside from, you know, the corporate world of television, which is so not remotely corporate, but the stuff I don't get paid for is sometimes the most creatively fulfilling.
You mentioned your time at Tall Ships.
Mm-hmm.
And you spoke, you know, kind of in general terms. You gave us a decent description of your time with Outlander. And you gave us some general descriptions of what you did. What can you tell listeners and us? What was that like? Not just like, okay, professionally, you know, it got you into a drama. You learned how a television series worked from conception to final product. Those are the things that are great for any budding writer's career, whether you want to go into drama or comedy. What were some of the, to you, more interesting parts of your job or some of the most exciting things that you experienced while you were with Outlander?
One of the coolest things that I got to do at Outlander was all of this research. So I was the writer's PA, and that encompassed so many varied things, some more basic, like picking up lunches, and then some more exciting and involved. But a big part of the job was reading all the books, knowing them backwards and forwards, and also doing a lot of research on Scotland in the 18th century. And sometimes a writer would be working on a scene and they would just throw something at me like, what would someone do for a hangover then? Or we want them to be walking through a field of flowers, but it's the middle of winter and I don't think anything would be in bloom, but we really need something to be in bloom. So like, what is something that really could be so I can just say it and like preferably have it be purple? And I'd be like, okay. Let me see. And so then I would do research on all that sort of thing. And or they'd be like, we want a poem that really conveys this particular emotion, but it also needs to be fairly known across different decades. And it would have to have existed in the 18th century, but be well known enough that, you know, Claire would know it in the 21st. And I was an English major. So I was like, I love this, like, let me get all nerdy up in it. And so that was like the really interesting, exciting stuff. And they're such little things, and it's not the sort of thing where you write a scene and then you see it on TV later, but I could be like, wow, I was a little part of that. And sometimes with the books, you know, I would be like, wait, we can't say that because later on in book three, something changes about that, and that was really exciting and cool. And in the meantime, it was just cool working with that group of people and feeling like you were really a part of something. And they made me feel very much a part of something, even though I was just an assistant. One of the memories always stands out. We got the first cut of the pilot. So it was the director's cut of the pilot before Ron had gotten his hands on it, because the director edits it first, and then it goes to Ron, who sits with the editor back in the States and works with him on it before sending it to the network and the studio. And so it was this first director's cut, rough cut, and we all gathered in the writer's room and we watched it. And I was sitting next to Ron and I was like, why am I here? I'm 22 and I don't know anything and this is so cool. And it ended and it was baffling, you know, it was so incredibly beautiful, and it didn't have any of the music yet, and it wasn't all color corrected yet, and a lot of things changed. I think it was like an hour and a half, and it was way too long, but I was just like, wow, we made that. How did that happen? And Ron turned to me and was like, so what did you think? And like looked at me earnestly as though my notes were going to mean anything. And I was just like, it was so great. You know, it's like, what am I going to say? That this happened is amazing. And it was cool. And then we just, he was like, well, you know, we've got a lot of work to do. And I was like, wow, I'm here. I'm like in the cockpit. And that was just really, really cool. And then that whole year after that, things really started rolling. And we had the premiere and we had fan events. And suddenly there were fans and all these book fans. And it was amazing because I was so new to it. And I had just started reading all the books. And I was like, oh, my God. This is a lot of pressure. We can't ruin it. But I also knew we weren't ruining it. So when I would see people on Twitter be like, I don't know, like the show can't do the books justice. I wanted to be like, guys, I'm watching it. Like, it's good. You're going to like it. And then to finally premiere and finally have people watch that and have them be happy and go like, wow, we made something and we're still making it. And now we're making seasons 3 and 4. And that's really, really cool.
In your time with Outlander, did you ever have an opportunity to actually travel to Scotland?
I am the only one who was there from the beginning who never got to go to Scotland.
What? That's a travesty.
I know. I agree. No, I know. There are all these union rules about how many Americans can be working. And so, yeah. And so they couldn't really like bring me over. And there wasn't me in Scotland. And so I didn't really have an excuse to go. Although at one point Ron was bringing over his kids and his kids' nanny and his kids' friends and kids' friends' nanny. And I was just like, hire me to be a nanny. Just take me over there. Give me an excuse. But yeah, I didn't get to go. I just got to see beautiful pictures and feel sorry for myself.
Have you been to Scotland just on a vacation or any kind of
no.
travel?
No. It's so sad.
Aww.
It's so sad.
It is, but you'll make it over there. This is totally a side question. Where have you traveled?
I've traveled a lot, and I got close to Scotland. I've been to England, Ireland, and Wales. I just didn't make it up there. I did a semester in Oxford, and so I had sort of an opportunity to travel around on weekends and breaks. I've been to Turkey and Morocco and Amsterdam and Italy. I spent a few weeks in college as well. So I've been very, very lucky to travel so much, but that just makes it more outrageous that a country that I now have so much random knowledge about and such a personal connection to, I have not been to. But I'm glad that I will be able to go, you know, now and have a deeper appreciation for it than I would have if I had gone before I worked at Outlander, because now everything is imbued with meaning beyond just being beautiful.
So were you like assigned to one specific writer, or did you help all the writers?
I helped all the writers. So there's a hierarchy in the room. The writer's PA is at the bottom, then is writer's assistant and script coordinator, and then are the writers. So on a normal TV show, a staff writer is like a baby writer, and then there's a story editor, and then it goes up and up and up to executive producer slash writer. Outlander is very different in that almost all of the writers from the beginning were executive producers or co-executive producers. So we didn't really have any, we don't have any lower level writers. And it's a very small room. There were only 5 writers when I was there, Ron, Ira, and Tony and Matt. And so we had a small support staff relatively compared to other shows. And beyond that, since they would go to supervise their own episodes in Scotland, they weren't always in LA at the time. And so when they would go to Scotland, then there might just be 2 writers in the room, and things would be slower as we just worked specifically with them. So yeah, I mean, different writers have different needs and require more or less depending on how much they like to have control over their own episode. But I worked with all of them.
Do you have a favorite?
I could not say. If I did, which I don't.
Favorite is Zoe.
Yes. She's the most talented of all.
She is. That, and even without the opposable thumb, she does really good work.
Yes, she does. She's actually sitting here sleeping, but I feel like her ears perked up a little bit at her name.
Aww.
Hey, Zoe.
So ultimately, your time at Outlander came to an end because you realized that you'd had this amazing opportunity, this amazing experience, and you wanted to go on and continue with comedy.
Yes, exactly. So I was at Outlander for so long, and Outlander is so great because we're almost never on a break. A lot of shows will go down for 3 months out of the year, but because Outlander is so involved and cinematic and I don't know, it just takes a really long time to make. And that's why it seems like it's never on TV. But it was, I was never on hiatus. And so I just sort of plowed through almost 3 years and was very happy there. And then a friend contacted me and said, I heard about a pilot that's looking for PAs. Would you be interested in applying? And part of me was like, a pilot lasts such a short amount of time because that means that the show hasn't even been picked up. It might not be made. They might not buy it. You might be employed for like a month on that pilot and then it doesn't go to series and you're just unemployed forever. And she was like, but it's a comedy and it's a half hour single cam, which is the kind of comedy that I really like. And it's being made by Matt Hubbard and Mike Schur, who are these Parks and Rec 30 Rock guys. And so I was like, this is a huge opportunity. So I applied and I interviewed for it. And about an hour later, they called me and said I got it and that I needed to start the following Monday.
Oh, wow.
And it was insane because it was crazy to work for so long with people and then suddenly be like, hey, I'm leaving, and not giving you 2 weeks notice, not giving you like any notice. But the what amazing thing about having worked at Outlander was they all knew me. They all knew I wanted to do comedy. They all really supported that. And they were like, absolutely, this is the right decision. You got to do what's right for you. So I went on to the pilot. After it ended, I actually went back to Outlander just to help them. This was very recently. I went back to Outlander to kind of secretly help them hire new people for seasons 3 and 4 before that was official. And so I was there doing a lot of interviews and I was there for probably like 5 or 6 more weeks. And then I left to do a job that I just finished on a show called Teachers on TV Land. And then that just finished. And now in 3 weeks, I'm going to work at Last Man on Earth on Fox. So it's been a wild ride. but it's been so good bouncing all over the place because I'm just meeting a ton of new people and trying a bunch of new things and seeing different sides of things and seeing different shows. And it's very cool. And it's nice to know that like I still have my Outlander family and I still talk to them all the time and I still, you know, email them for the office goss and it's great.
Now, when do you find out if that, or have you already found out if that pilot is picked up?
The pilot did not get picked up.
Oh, darn it.
Which is a bummer. But at the same time, all the people that I worked on the pilot with were all Last Man on Earth people.
Oh, nice.
So that's actually how they met me. And then they asked me to go with them back to that show. So the pilot didn't go, but nobody is unemployed, which is
very nice. So that is your next gig.
Yes. Yeah.
Perfect. Now that it's public knowledge, or now that it's been announced that 3 and 4 have been greenlit, and you said you were back there secretly helping out before the announcement. Can you tell us who or what type of people in what type of roles you were helping hire? Was it more writers?
I can't even answer that. I don't know what I'm allowed to say.
That's fair.
She's like, what part of top secret did you not understand?
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't want to know names. I don't want to know ages.
I don't know what I'm allowed to say. That's I will say that the people I met with and the people I interviewed were all support staff and that they were expanding that and getting a researcher and a new script coordinator and another me and another writer's assistant. And so there was a ton of people coming through the office. And yeah, that was my first time interviewing people. And it was, and I'm so not equipped for it. I was so unprofessional in these interviews. I wanted them to be really comfortable and to feel really like safe and cool. And
Were you giving them like neck rubs or something? I
mean. Just, you know, well, no, but I was like too friendly and too like, like, oh, like, that's so cool. Oh, like, you know, I like in one of the interviews, like, this guy showed me a bunch of pictures of his bulldog, and like, I was asking his name, and I was like, oh, that's so cool. That's awesome. Like, you know, I got to bring everything back to Zoe. Ultimately, it's truly a codependent relationship, but I would have these like chatty relationships. And then I'd be like, oh, that person's so cool. But then you can only hire however many people. And someone else is like, oh, I didn't really like them. Or, oh, I like this person better. And then I had to email these people that I had been way too buddy buddy with this like very just like form letter of, you know, thank you for your interest in Outlander, you know, we'll not. And I was like, now I seem like a jerk. So I'll be better next time. I'll be more professional. but our office isn't that professional, you know, like it's, I'm sure you can imagine it's a bunch of writers who like to drink and eat Oreos and talk about Nashville, the TV show.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sad it's not on anymore.
I know. Oh my gosh, I'll tell you, that is like the guilty pleasure of Tony and Meryl and I. The women of Outlander love Nashville. And we would discuss it every week. And much to like everybody else making fun of us. And then the day it was canceled, there were some pretty sad emails going around.
I remember the first time we talked to Tony, I'm pretty sure that came up.
Or Nashville?
Nashville. I'm pretty sure that she and I talked about Nashville.
Nashville
briefly.
And cops. Oh. No, not cops.
I'm like, cops.
Cop Rock.
Oh, cop yes, Rock. I did bring Tony. Up Cop Rock.
Oh, for Cop Rock. Which like, is so funny.
It's like, that's the most awesome thing ever, that someone like Tony, this man, this woman who writes the most heart-wrenching stuff and pulls it out of your soul mm-hmm. and makes you weep.
Wrote Cop Rock.
That's just the best thing ever.
Yeah. And that is what you see on TV. Tony brings that in the room, and everybody has their own personality and their own focus. But in the writer's room, it was always Tony who would look at an action-packed episode, and she'd be like, but like, let's locate these characters emotionally. What are they feeling? What's their arc? What's changing for them emotionally? What are they going through? And she'd be like, it's been, you know, a whole episode, and we haven't had this scene where we really locate Jamie and Claire together, where they're just checking in and you're seeing their relationship. And, you know, like, we need a character beat and a simple moment between them. And when you're in the room and you're like, ooh, battles, you know, excitement, drama, you forget that that is what makes a show so good. And what makes a show like Outlander so special is that emotional bond between the characters. And she always brought that back. And then you watch her episodes and you're like, oh yeah, she's really good at this. She knows what she's talking about.
Oh, she killed us in 207. I mean,
yeah.
I don't even know if I want to see any kind of other cut, because the final cut was way too much. I mean, perfect, but yeah, it was so much.
I don't want an extended version of that episode.
Well, yeah, we would get dailies every day, which are the scenes that they shoot that day. They just send those to the producers in the writer's office, and we would watch them. And we'd usually watch them over lunch, and people would discuss them, and they'd be like, oh, what are they doing there? Or like, wow, that really turned out well there. But sometimes it was just way too emotional. Like, why? The scene with Blackjack and Fergus, I remember the day that those dailies come in, and you're watching that scene again and again from various angles, and you know it's fake, and you know that these are characters, and you've met them in real life, like some of us, and yet it's like, I can't, like, this is terrible, this is awful, and that's not really like what you want to watch while you're eating a burrito.
Or and petting Zoe.
Oh, Lord. I don't think she could take her cat to the office.
That's true. I forgot about that part.
Zoe is not old enough for Outlander yet.
No.
I'm just kidding. She actually was a street cat. She lived on the streets for a year and a half, and I'm like fairly certain she was a prostitute, so she can handle just about anything. Oh my God. People who don't know me are going to find me insane, and none of these people know me, so.
But she has a really nice cat.
They're like, she's has a really cool job, but she's possibly in love with her cat.
Well, I think a lot of our listeners may not know that they know you, but you were doing the Outlander Writers Twitter account?
I was. Not always, and it wasn't exclusively me, but sometimes those tweets were me. But also, I didn't have full artistic control over it because I was told by the powers that be that I had to be very professional and really just promote and support the show. And I was like, can't I tweet a photo of this whiskey bottle? And they'd be like, no. People want to know that we're working here, not drinking whiskey. And I was like, I think they want to know both.
Actually, they want to know that you're working as you're drinking.
Yeah.
In the middle of the Highlands of Scotland.
Yes. Write drunk, edit sober.
Oh my gosh. So yes, exactly. Wow. So your cat, you think she was a streetwalker? I do.
She actually, I got her through Outlander. I can't believe I should have led with this.
Yeah. You're a terrible comedy writer. Come on. You know, 50 minutes into our conversation, you have what you're supposed to lead with.
I know. Oh my God. I was watching TV on a Tuesday night at like 10 o'clock, and I get a phone call from Megan Welsh, who was script coordinator for most of season one of Outlander. And she's like, Anna, I found a cat. Do you want it? And I was like, what? What are you talking about? And she was like, I found this cat. I like need to bring it to the vet and see if it has an owner, but I can't bring it to my apartment because I have another cat. Like, can I drop this cat off at your apartment? And I was like, oh my God, like my coworker at 10 o'clock calling me about a cat. And I was like, yeah, bring it over. And she was the cutest thing I'd ever seen in my life. And she was very, very tiny. She slept on my chest that night and I fell in love with her. And I told Megan, you know, like, see if she's chipped and see if she has an owner. But if not, like, I'm going to keep her. And she didn't have an owner and she wasn't a kitten. Despite how tiny she was, she turned out to just be a very malnourished street cat. And so, yes, I did sleep with a stray cat in my bed. And I kept her forever. And now we're best friends. And she has, like, the most health issues of any cat I've ever heard of, but she doesn't care that she costs me thousands of dollars. She sees a dermatologist. Aww, she was on antidepressants for a while.
That's got to be an LA thing though, right?
I don't know. When they told me my cat had anxiety and had to go on antidepressants, I was like, this is the most Hollywood thing I've ever heard in my life. But it turned out it wasn't anxiety, and I had her on antidepressants for then no reason, and it turned out to be really bad allergies. And now she's on like a special diet and takes a medication, and she's the biggest pain in the ass in the world.
Commonly, this is my pet nerddom coming out. And I had a cat who I got her, and then within like 6 months or whatever, she started vomiting. I'm like, what's going on? And her vet said at the time, in cats, and maybe with dogs, but especially with cats, if they're having like these vomiting issues, but they're not like a regurgitation, right? It's right away. It's not like 3 hours later. That the first thing you do is you check for a protein allergy. And so we took her off, you know, turkey, took her off chicken, mm-hmm. the most common allergens in protein for cats. Mm-hmm. And so no, basically no fowl, and then no fish. So mm-hmm. now we're years later, we're stuck with
venison.
We haven't had to go there yet. We do duck.
Duck fowl.
It is, but it's an uncommon protein, and it's not common in pet food. So you can buy it. And we also do a limited ingredient diet and no grains.
The duck rice formula.
Except we can't do rice. We don't do grains because she's a little bit special needs. And yeah, what I'm saying is I understand the whole pet thing. I have one that can't keep some food down sometimes. And so she has that. So she has a special food with the protein. My other cat has idiopathic feline urinary tract disorder or something like that. Feline lower urinary tract disorder. So I've got like a special group here.
Cat hospital.
Exactly.
Cats are so low maintenance. And
I know.
I mean, they are in that they feed themselves and they make their needs known and they clean themselves. But it's horrible. Like when I thought that Zoe had anxiety, I that was terrible. That was like an emotional journey for me. I would like sit in front of her and be like, why am I not enough for you?
So but, you were basically giving your cat an emotional, what do you call it? You're giving her...
I was like speaking her subtext, yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, but you were almost giving her like a guilty, what do you call it?
A guilt trip?
A guilt trip.
Yeah. But I
can't talk.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, because I was like, all she knows is the life of my apartment. Is my apartment so depressing that she needs to go on antidepressants? Everyone I know is like, you're an insane person. It's a cat. But I was very relieved when it turned out that it wasn't anxiety and it was allergies and a much simpler fix to the physical versus the emotional.
Mm-hmm. Life as a streetwalker could have been quite exciting.
And now she has to live with a neurotic spider type, so.
You don't know. Her old street friends might come by and taunt her from the window.
That's so true. They probably do. They're like, you're a kept woman now. What happened?
Exactly.
She used to be so independent.
So from comedy to Outlander to streetwalking cats, what are your other goals?
Well, I guess this is something I should have thought about. No.
What are you're welcome. Goals? I'm just kidding.
Let's figure it out. What's my purpose in life?
I'll put it a slightly different way. When you're 137 and you're looking back on your life, what are some things that you would like to see that you have done?
Oh, okay. Well, I most certainly want to have written for a TV show. That's the goal right now. A lot of people, it takes them a while to break into it. So I'm not on any, you know, I'm not like I have to be staffed on a show by 30, although that would be really nice. We'll see. So I want to write. I want to continue to perform forever, whether that's actually performing in something I write or if that's just on stage at UCB. I love it and it makes me happy. I want to get married and have kids, but cat children are great too. And I don't know. I like to travel more. And
you need to go to Scotland.
And find Jamie Fraser.
Just go to Scotland first.
Just go to Scotland.
I mean, if you find Jamie, that's awesome. More power to you. But first you have Jamie to get yourself to Scotland.
Compatible in real life. Like, Clara's much more, I'm like too high maintenance. He wouldn't have to save me so often, but he'd have to talk to me like about being crazy about my cat. And I don't think he'd want to indulge in my bullshit. And I'd be like, why do you, you know, like, you need to let your honor go. Like, you're too wrapped up in this. And he'd be like, you don't get it. This is my life.
But I also feel like you would know when to just shut up, because Claire does not.
That's true. I know. But honestly, if I went back in time, I would so quickly. I mean, she has knowledge of herbs. She has knowledge of all sorts of things. And I wouldn't know any of that stuff, but I would know when to shut up. That is a strength.
And depending on where and when, you would know how to make people laugh.
Yeah.
But also that could get you killed. I mean, it depends on where
you go. Yeah, I don't know like what jobs there were.
I know.
Like, funny people at that time. I don't know.
Jesters?
It would just have to be a side job. It would have to just be a special skill. It could not be
that
your main bread
that, like,
and butter.
Sings about the stones at the beginning and tells Claire's story in song. I could be that guy. Just kind of be like, ooh, ooh.
What do they call him?
He was a Welsh somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, the character was Welsh, not the actor. The bard?
Oh, wait.
Gillen the Bard.
Yeah.
Gillen the Bard.
Wait, can I tell you who my favorite character was purely based on hotness, season one?
Yes.
The gypsy that, like, comes in. He's got this, like, perfect olive skin and this long dark hair. And Claire's like, you stole my song. And he goes, a song is a song is a song. And I died. Like, watching those dailies, I was like, it's Captain Jack Sparrow. Like, and then for the rest of season two, I was like, I'd be in the room and I'd be like, you know what I feel like this scene really needs is for that gypsy to come back. And
they're in France. That they're in France. We have to get him here.
And I'd be like, no, those gypsy caravans, man, they go across oceans. And everyone's like, Anna, this is why you don't write the show.
Oh, my gosh. So I don't know. Okay, since you went there, I'll go there. I don't know how, and don't worry, you're not going to hurt our feelings at all, but I don't know how much followed our Twitter or anything that we put out there, or yeah, namely anything that I put out there. But I have, hey, your favorite from season one was the gypsy dude. My favorite, because we don't know going forward, at least Summer and I, you probably have an idea, but Summer and I don't know going forward how much. We know they love Frank, and we know there's going to be some kind of flashbacks to something, something, probably in season three, depending on how they end season two, of a certain BJR. Dude, Tobias, I can't.
I get it.
Thank you.
Okay. I like shouldn't say this, but I just find him, he has like such a confidence about him, even in real life. Like, I feel like he has this swagger that is just like charismatic up the wazoo. And it's just like, wow, look at you go in your like colorful socks. I never actually spoke to him in my time there because he only came out for like the premiere, I think. Mm-hmm. And I saw him at the after party. And I was like, wow, look at that man just being confident and cool. And I did not speak to him.
He's like quietly hysterical. Like, he's the quiet guy in the back of the room that's like got constant jokes running in his head. And then when he does open his mouth, everyone just laughs.
Yeah. In his career, like, he is such a good actor. I mean, I saw his audition. This is how old school I am, you guys. I was there from the beginning. I was like, before he was cool. No, but I did see his audition, and he was wearing this burgundy sweater, I remember. And first I saw him be Frank, and I was like, okay. And then he turned into an entirely different human, still wearing like a sort of professorial burgundy sweater to play Blackjack Randall. And I was like, oh, my God. Hire this man. And they were like, we didn't ask your opinion. We already were planning.
Oh my gosh. I mean, yeah.
Sam's audition. And I was like, also hire that man. And they were like, okay. And that's how he was hired. No, I'm just kidding.
I was about to say, so all thanks to Anna. That's awesome. Oh my gosh.
Actually, if we can get that back to Sam, that I'm for his career, that could do wonders for me.
Oh, my goodness. So that's awesome. Now, Summer, do you want to say who you're hot to trot for?
Who am I hot to trot
for? Well, at least season one, it was Sam.
Oh, well.
It's always going to be Sam.
Yeah, but I feel like.
I'm sorry. It's Tobias.
I feel like. I feel like because I don't know Sam, but the more we see of Sam.
We don't know anybody.
But the more we see of Sam, the more he becomes like.
A real person?
Just like your buddy. So I'm not.
She's a hard time objectifying him now.
Yeah,
that's true. That's good, he's so and that's nice. A good point. I remember the first person that I knew, the first straight woman that I knew that went to Scotland, and came back was like, I hope no one listens to this that knows me. but they were like, man, like Tobias is where it's at, and they were like, Sam is like he's like a little brother. He's like. And nice and like goofy, and I was like, maybe he's your brother. He's not my.
Well, I don't have a brother, so.
But yeah, I don't know. Honestly, like, there needs to be some more good-looking dudes on that show. I just always think like, how lucky is Claire that she falls back in time, and like. Of course she has to. I mean, I guess that's the whole premise of the thing. But, like, Jamie, like, really, that's not who I would get. If I fall back in time, like, they're not going to pair me off with Jamie.
No.
And I'm just going to, like, live out a quiet, sad life.
With Rupert.
With Rupert. It's always going to, yeah.
No, you'd go with the gypsy dude. Yeah,
gypsy
she'd run away with the gypsies.
Oh, my God. If I could, oh, man. I would live my best life with that gypsy dude.
Yes. My season two crush is Stanley Weber.
Stanley Weber is the most attractive man I've ever seen.
Oh, right? My goodness.
Aside from my gypsy.
There you go.
Except for your gypsy. So not that it's not scientific and we don't know anything about anything. It's just we see everything after the fact. It does not take a genius to make this conclusion. after the fact. First of all, it's Hollywood, right? It's a movie. They're not going to have they definitely could have a not so attractive looking baddie. But yeah. I mean, obviously, since you have one actor playing BGR and Frank, got it. So that's going to be, if one's good looking, they're both going to be good looking. So I thought, okay, well, you know, okay, that's season one. He's the bad guy for season one. And he's the bad guy-ish, but not really for season two. Season two would have been Stanley Weber. And when they cast him, you know, like a year or more ago, well, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, whenever we got that first, like the announcement, it was like, are you kidding me? Like, okay, as soon as they did Stanley Weber, you're like, okay, that's it. We know how Stars rolls, or at least we know how Outlander Stars rolls. And that is, they are never going to give us a bad-looking baddie.
But that wasn't even in his character description.
I know. No, that's what I'm saying.
And there was actually a conversation of like, is he too traditionally good looking? And, you know, we're not teen drama and we want like real actors and real characters. And I'm just there in the background being like, please don't hold it against him that he's hot. You know,
he can't help it.
but that's something that they take into consideration, because sometimes we'll be watching auditions and someone, they'll just be like, oh, they look too candy or too 2016. And I'm like, I think they're perfect. They're like, Anna, simmer.
You're like, I'll like, take his number.
Tell him I'll hire him.
Yes.
He's a good dramatic actor, but he's actually really funny. He's Stanley been in some Weber? Comedy. Stanley Weber, yes.
Wow, I need to see that.
And it was actually an English film. It was a comedy with him, Karen Gillan, uh-huh. of Doctor Who fame.
Oh, okay.
And another dude, a guy, I forget who he was, who played her her original boyfriend. That was more like a romantic comedy, kind of. But he was really funny, and like that's and it was all in English, so it was really and it was set in Glasgow.
Oh
so
wow!
It was kind of an I forget what it's called. If you just Google
IMDb him,
yes, Google him. It's with him and Karen Gillan. You'll see it. It's very sweet. It's very sweet.
Yeah. During that dinner party scene, when she's like having her, you know, wordplay with him and stuff, I was always just like, look at them flirting. Like, look at that chemistry. And everyone's like, Anna, that's not the point of the scene.
No, but look at
no she doesn't like him. And
oh
I was like,
oh my gosh. I
should leave Jamie for him.
I mean, he was sexy before then, but that episode, at the beginning of that episode, I forget what number was that number, like 4 or 5, whatever. Mm-hmm. Started at the beginning of that episode. I've always noticed he's attractive. Don't get me wrong. He's a good actor, all that stuff. But I forget. It was when, I guess it was the same episode. At the beginning of the episode when she was poisoned, right? That's the beginning of that episode. Mm-hmm. And he's walking around. Jamie's playing chess. And she's over in the corner drinking that wine. And he's watching her like, I see you. And the way he's watching her. And I was like, oh my gosh. As I was watching it. Because Summer and I watch it separately. And then we come together and chat later on. And I was watching it. Like, I started taking notes. And I was like, oh my God. The first thing, I promised you, they just popped in my brain. Summer hated it because I had like 7 of them for this episode. And I never do this ever. But I came up with like a whole bunch of hashtags for him. And the first one was hashtag sexy cocky. That's my least favorite. And then later on during the dinner scene, it was like hashtag sexy fork. Because, oh my God, everything he did with the fork, he like everything was... It was tasteful because there was like no tongue involved. But
yes, yes.
It was so freaking sexy. It's like, good Lord.
Yeah. Tongue can be tasteful.
The right amount of tongue.
Summer.
That is so funny. That is so I wish he didn't have to wear a wig.
Oh my gosh.
That totally changes his look.
It does.
Without
it
that does. White powdered wig. But he's
and I'm sure that on. Appeals to like a very specific type of lady. But I like the natural hair.
That hasn't appealed to any sort of lady since like the 1700s.
You don't know. They're out there. They're watching Outlander. They're like, this is what I'm about. I found my thing.
You can't really do it with a wig, with that wig. You can't do it with those powdered, like fake curled, whatever wigs. But one of the things, and everyone I say this to, like, it's not that they don't understand. They probably don't agree. But anyone who's heard me or that I've said this to in person and they've heard me say this,
they always go, ugh, Ginger. And I ain't going to say what he was doing was disgusting and wrong and deserves all – Summer's shaking her head right now – deserves all the condemnation of the world. But at the end, stop it.
The lead into your stories are so long.
I'm sorry. But at the end of season one, episode 16, when the episode starts and you see Tobias next to Jamie, right?
Uh-huh.
Excuse me. Tobias.
Next to Sam?
Yeah. BGR next to Sammy.
Oh, okay.
Next to Jamie. His hair is down. I don't like it when he takes his hair and like puts it over his face. That's kind of gross. But Tobias.
That's where you draw the line.
Yes, is where I draw the line. But Tobias with the wig. And his hair down.
You were like, yes.
That's. I'm just like, it's a bit. I know.
She's like, okay, I'm tagging in, Jamie. I'm tagging in.
No.
That. I mean, I didn't anticipate hearing that from that episode. But I'm so glad you liked it.
Basically, Tobias in the wig does it for me. That's all.
You know what? I get it. I feel. You know.
But it's different than Staley in a wig, because that wig does not, like, flow.
No, and it's very...
And it's clearly a wig. It's supposed to be a wig.
You're right. It's a wig on purpose. But the other one is supposed to be his not a wig.
But I really wanted, in the scene in the Star Chamber, when he died, for that wig to come off. So he could at least die without that wig on his head. One moment of, I am gorgeous, and now you can all see it.
And, yeah, and just regret this. Claire's just suddenly kneeling. She's like, I'm so sorry.
See, that calls for a hashtag. Hashtag could have had it.
Claire was like so close to getting that. And
that would have been an angry matchup, but it would have been a pretty intense matchup.
You're so bad at hashtags.
And he had a wife. He had a wife in that.
He did. That's right. That was, and Tony said that Tony told us in our interview that that she actually found that or saw that and then remembered it. And
the only mention was like his pretty wife.
She talked to Diana about it. And Diana's like, he's not married. And she's like, but Diana, it's in the book. And she's like, oh. So, you know, when you've only written these, like, you know, what, 20 years ago or more.
Yeah.
She has so much in her brain that she's a genius of so many things.
And he's only in the one book. So it's not like he's a recurring character.
You have not read The Bulges.
His wife was really pretty. I remember noticing. And just being like, look at this couple. So nice. What a thing.
She had it.
Yeah, she had it made. And Claire ruined that.
No, I mean, whereas Claire could have had it, she had it.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
Okay, question.
There's a whole revenge plot storyline that was never even looked at. I mean, because I think his pretty wife would be pretty upset. That her pretty husband.
True, we never
dead.
Hear about that. Now, you've read, how many of the books have you read, by the way?
Let me think.
If you have to think, it's not all of them.
It's definitely not all of them. I've read like the first, what is the fifth one?
Fiery Cross.
I think I've read the first four, and I've read them all several times because I have to write, or I had to write, summaries of all the chapters. And then I also had to do these dialogue docs where I would pull out all the dialogue directly from the books and type it into a final draft script document that then people would use cross-referencing when writing their scripts.
That does not sound tedious at all. I mean, it sounds fun because, I mean, if you to someone like Summer and I, like, because we love these books, that would be like, you know, it would be fun and geeky, but you know, this was your job,
right? Yeah. It is fun until like a few hours in, and that's when you find yourself eating Oreos and just like hanging out at other people's desks. And it's always Richard. He's like my big brother, and he'd be like, "How are those dialogue docs going, Anna?" And I'd be like, shut up. They're so good. As I ate like my sixth Oreo to avoid going back. But it is great. And when you reread them, you know, like you discover all these exciting things and you get to really know them. And it's fascinating. And it's fascinating to read on to the books, like after cast things and to see it through that lens. One of the strangest things that I did in the writer's room, this doesn't answer any question, But
you're offering us.
It's really funny when you watch the dailies and it's a voiceover scene because the voiceover is recorded later and then added in. So the voiceover scenes are literally just close-ups of Kat's face or like her overlooking the castle walls or her, you know, riding in a carriage down a French street. And it's dead silent and her facial expressions are changing because she knows as an actor like what she's supposed to be thinking at the time. But when you're watching it, it's just hilariously uncomfortable. And so in the writer's room, I would always add my own voiceover.
Did you speak French?
No, I always gave her this very strange, like, Katharine Hepburn voice. And be like, as I rode through town, I would think, what really was it all for?
I can't do it, but Paris never brought us anything good.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. And then the other thing that I would do that people found funny at first but probably got annoying was campaign for, like, 2.5 years to get to play Brianna.
Oh, my gosh. How did it start, and what were your antics?
Well, it started with this whole thing of, like, who's going to be Brianna? Who's going to be Brianna? Who's going to be Brianna? We can't find Brianna. You know, like, everybody wants to know who she is on the internet. Like, everybody's speculating. Redhead actresses are, like, mailing photos of themselves. And I was like, guys, it's okay. Like, I know it's stressful. I will step up, and I'll just be Brianna for you guys. I'm 5'8". That's somewhat tall. Yeah. And I'm American. And they're like, you're not an actor. Also, no. Then I just auditioned perpetually by going, mama, mama. recreating these scenes and being like, don't leave me, mama. Spoiler alert.
you should have done it with a Boston accent.
I know. I made her very sniveling. And I would do this really just like anytime I had the chance. I felt like Tony was like halfway convinced at one point. And I also, there was a brief moment in time there that I auditioned for Claire by just like continually going, stop, help, he's going over. The audition scene, it's like in the pilot where Jamie falls off the horse, and that was in the audition scene, and we heard hundreds of actresses say it, and then they heard me say it hundreds of times because I am very unprofessional. But I still haven't gotten my part, you guys.
Look, we cannot help you with that. Well, maybe you're the one who knows people, my dear.
Maybe hashtag cast Anna on Outlander. Right now.
I'll have my own hashtag Anna. Get me a job on Outlander.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, that boat has sailed.
The power's gone.
Oh. So, do you have any embarrassing stories?
Oh, I love those.
Oh, gosh.
About yourself, because you probably can't share about others.
I can't share all the embarrassing stories about everyone. No,
you actually can. But we don't expect all of them.
Let me see. I don't know. I think my life is, like, pretty embarrassing, but I own it. I don't know. I guess just probably the first time that I met Sam, which you guys were there. It was at that fan event.
Oh, yes. We were there.
Yeah, and that was my first time meeting him. But our the story. Next day, he and Diana and Kat came to the writer's office, which was, like, this was also strange and new. And the show hadn't come out yet. And this was, like, and he came walking into my little cubicle, which I had decorated in such a weird way. Like, I had, like, a House of Cards poster, but, like, with pictures of the Outlander people, like, the characters. And he, like, came walking into my cubicle, and he goes, like, hello, Anna, how are you? And he, in his Scottish accent, and he kisses me on the cheek, and I, like, lost my shit. I think I kept it together on the outside, but on the inside I was like, what is happening? Like, are we dating now? I'm pretty sure we're engaged, and I lost my shit. And I, like, couldn't be normal. And then every time somebody asked me for something really basic, like, oh, could I get a copy of the script? I'd be like, oh yeah. And they'd be like, thank you. And I'd be like, oh, I'm so good at handing out scripts. It's just really my talent. I can pour coffee so well. But yeah, all my assistant duties. But yeah, I don't know. Everybody was so cool and like a family and really liked each other. And I don't think that's very normal on a lot of TV shows, unfortunately. But it was really such a – that was my first real job in TV. And I was so lucky to be there for so long and to have them really – support me. And it was just such an incredible experience. And it's so incredible now to have the payoff, because I remember those first several months where people would be like, oh, what do you do for a living? And I'd say, I work for this TV show called Outlander. And people would be like, oh, like I haven't heard of that. And I'd be like, oh, well, it's not out yet. And then when it first premiered, you know, you had the diehard fans and they loved it and they watched it and they talked about it. And then just over the course of first season and now second season, it just keeps growing and more people are watching and it's getting all this critical acclaim and it got nominated for Golden Globes and like more people know. And it's so cool, because then when people are like, hey, what do you do? And I would be like, I work for this TV show called Outlander. They'd be like, of course, like I know Outlander. I watch that. Can you get Sam Heughan to come to my sister's bachelorette party? I'd be like, no, he's not a stripper. But I'm glad you watched the show.
He seems like he'd be game, though.
Like, I'm sure if
no,
he was up.
Stop talking about her husband.
No, I'm married to the gypsy.
That's right. Sorry.
Actually, he probably like doesn't believe in marriage.
It's like a hand fasting.
Yes.
A gypsy hand fasting.
Yeah, someday. I don't even remember what his name is, but I'll find him.
What was it like the first time on the first episode? I'm guessing it was 101 that you saw your name credit.
Oh, that was so cool. That was so cool. Because I think probably the first time I saw it with credits was at San Diego Comic-Con when we had the premiere. But I don't remember seeing it, because I was probably freaking out and I'd also probably been drinking. but I was like freaking out, and there was like applause and we were like, oh, we made a show. But then I went on the actual premiere night and I watched it at my parents' house with them, and we paused it on the DVR and I took a photo of it. And I was like, I made it. I have IMDb now.
That's what I would have done. I would have been watching it on my computer or whatever. And then I would have like stopped it and taken a screenshot and sent it to all my buddies.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I posted it on Instagram and Facebook. And I was like, guys, I'm famous now.
It's not a big deal.
Try to stay cool.
Exactly. I'm still going to go to dinner with you tomorrow night.
Yeah. I'm still me, you guys.
Oh my goodness.
I just want to tell you that your gypsy's name was Martin Brody.
Martin Brody. I'm going to write this down.
I IMDb'd that for you.
Oh my goodness.
Do you guys think that he listens to this podcast?
Are you really, truly asking us that? I'm pretty sure that's 100% no.
But I'm going to start campaigning for it now.
If he's on Twitter, we can, like, tag him.
Oh, my God. No, I'd be so embarrassed.
Okay.
The writers would see that, and they'd just be like, Jesus Christ, Anna.
But they wouldn't be surprised, Anna. They know you.
I mean, but they're like, pretend to be normal in public. Like, I'm not an official representative of the show, but
sure.
They might not want their PA scamming on Gypsy Martin Brody. But you know what? Like, I gotta live my life.
You do you, man.
Yeah. You do. So, Martin, if you're listening, I'm out here. Call me. Twitter at Animal Halligan.
And she's got a really cool cat.
I do.
Who is not anxious at all.
Yeah. Martin can be her new daddy. Aww.
Wait, her new daddy? Does she have an old daddy?
Quietly wishing for death.
How is Zoe now?
She's awake. She's just, you mean health-wise?
Well, I'm certainly, you're welcome to tell us that too. I just mean, like, right now, is she still asleep?
She's sitting on a bar stool. She's awake. My sister's cat was trying to attack her earlier.
Aww.
So now she's very vigilant. But yeah, she's chilling. She's chilling. She is not a very playful cat. She just kind of sits
That's even better. It's even more low maintenance.
Sorry, it sounds so bad.
No, I love it. She always sits on my lap while I watch TV, and she sits on my bed while I write, and she just is very – she loves to be around people, but she's not attacking ever or playing. In fact, like, sometimes I worry. I'm like, is there something wrong with her? But yeah, there are too many things wrong with her. Who knows?
Who can pick just one?
She's got a few things.
Yeah. Yeah. Outlander Kitty.
She totally is. Yeah. I mean, that's how you got her.
Yeah. And we have Outlander babies now too.
Uh-oh.
Well, not me. I also had a child. No.
Nothing wrong with that, but I didn't know where you were going with that.
No, Richard had a baby while on Outlander, and so did Renee, who was who's one of our Sony people.
Oh,
she's actually had two babies.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So they're all children of Outlander.
Are they any of the kids named after characters or Scottish Gaelic names?
No. No. They should be. I don't remember. They all have, like, trendy LA names.
Oh.
Richard's son is named Bodie, but I'm not sure where that comes from. That would be funny, though, if he named him, like, Rupert. Murtaugh.
It's not that I didn't appreciate him season one. I totally did. But Murtaugh season two, I know we're not even done yet, is like, he's completely different from BJ R. Tobias, but he's attractive too. And what? He's a tall dude. he's almost taller than Jamie.
Is he?
He is up to him, and in one of the scenes in 209, he was a little bit taller than him.
He might have been on an apple cart.
Could have been.
Apple cart.
No. It could have been, like, on a hill. I think it was Jane was, like, on a hill or something. But I was like, holy heck.
He's
really freaking tall. He's, like, at least 6'2".
You want me to IMDb and prove you wrong?
No. He's not tiny.
Just keep your fantasy.
He's not your pocket, Murtaugh. I'm not saying he's pocket size.
No, I'm just saying he's a great actor. We already appreciated that. But he's very attractive, too.
Yes. Murtaugh is funny this season, too. I feel like he's got more of a sense of humor, which is kind of fun.
I mean, he got action. He got all kinds of stuff this season.
Right? Yeah. Cool. Sorry, I always remember that episode of season one where Claire's like, what do you know of love, to Murtaugh? Do you remember that?
Was that on the beach?
When they're on the road and she's like all upset, emotional, and she's like, what would you know of love? And I was always like, Claire, stop. The man has feelings.
He's not made of
stone. And that's when he turns around and talks about Jamie's mom, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that was like, wasn't in a, they were like around a, they were near a beach or near the ocean.
Yeah,
I think that came a little later. I think she...
The talk about him and the pearls?
The talk about the pearls came on the beach, but her
freaking him out?
Earlier on the road.
She's like, you've never experienced love. Well, she didn't say that. But I was like, Murtaugh has gotten laid at least once in his life.
He got laid lots of times in France.
Yeah, so Murtaugh's ship came in.
Literally. So we know there's a lot of doomed Highlanders. Was there any campaigning in the writer's room to save any of them?
There was. And you will see if anything came of that when you finish the show.
That is true.
Some future episode.
You will know what happens when you've seen it.
Yes. That's the way to figure out what was discussed in the room. But there was a lot of back and forth on a lot of things. Well, thanks.
Whoa.
I'm like, here's what I can tell you. There was a lot of back and forth on a lot of
And someone won that argument.
Yeah, there were discussions and things were decided.
And there were words written.
Yeah.
And you're either going to love it or hate it.
And people shot it.
There you go. That's the best part.
Yeah.
They just write stuff down and people shoot it.
Isn't like that cool?
Just go do that.
Yeah.
So amazing.
It's when you think about it like that, it's kind of silly and funny and awesome.
No, they're like in there going, we are gods.
Exactly.
We wrote this and they did it.
Yeah. I know. Well, that's the dream. That's the goal eventually. But in the meantime, I can feed them coffee and then they can write something and then they can shoot it. And I can say, if they didn't have that caffeine, they might not have written that.
It is an important role.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up a little bit with Anna, how can people...
follow you or find out more about you?
Well, they can follow me on Twitter. My Twitter is at Animal Halligan. It's spelled AnnamalHalligan. And that's really where I'm going to be updating about all my stuff. So when I have improv shows, if they live in LA, they could come to those and talk to me. I'll be putting out my web series there once we finally get it up and running. Any sketches that I write, I'll post. And I'll just write about my cats and jokes. Jokes usually about my cats and my sad love life.
And your gypsy lover.
And my gypsy lover.
Anytime, even if it's like, say, your web series that has nothing to do with anything Outlander, right, at all. If you want to send me a DM, I'm happy to retweet. Or if you want to tag us, dude, like I said, once you're part of the Outlander family in any way connected, you always are. So we're happy to, and we know people because of the connection will want to follow you as well.
That would be amazing. I would absolutely love that. That'd be very, very cool. I appreciate it. I'm co-producing it with a friend right now. We'll be hosting it. And I think we're going to start filming in July, and then I imagine with editing and everything it might be like September. So it's a long project, but hopefully it'll turn out really, really funny. So we'll see.
I look forward to seeing that, because I know there are a lot of web series out there, and that's how a lot of people get started, and a lot of people are found. And it's exciting that you're doing that, because it gives you creative control, and also you're working in something that you love at the same time.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm really excited about it. The concept of it, or I guess maybe I shouldn't say what the concept of it is, because it's too early. And everybody says that I tell too many people, as though someone's going to steal our idea, which I don't think anyone is. But yeah, it's great. It'll be funny. It involves interviewing people about their love lives. And I've been interviewing a lot of people in preparation for it. And I am absolutely amazed with what people are willing to share with a stranger. And it is fascinating. And it is so funny. And so I think it'll be really great.
Well, you know, now that you've said that, you have to interview the gypsy.
Well, this could be my excuse.
There you go.
I want an international feel. So
so I went to Scotland or wherever he's from. Whatever, it doesn't matter where he's from.
He's probably, most of them are Scottish, yeah, okay, especially season one.
Yeah.
I think he was Irish. I seem to remember that he was Irish.
Well, with the last name of Brody, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my family is Irish. So this is something we could talk about.
See, that's See, your in.
You've got this.
Like, look, I worked on Outlander, and you're hot, and I'm Irish, so we need to talk. And now I'm under this umbrella of press, because I'm
right.
I'm doing professional interviews. So, yeah, tell me about your stuff.
Exactly. And he's like, wait, can you cast me in anything? And I'm like, what?
Depends. Are you married?
Sorry. Some very, very important interview questions like that.
I would love to cast you as my husband in real life.
Yes. Summer. Oh, my
shit,
goodness.
But there are good benefits.
Oh, my goodness.
I hold out hope.
So you are hilarious. I love that you love cats. And I love that Summer stop. And
the
I love
where you say like 10 things you really liked about the interview.
Pretty
you
much. You know, the more you interrupt me, the longer it's gonna take me. So it has been so awesome having you here with us and to chat for much longer than we had tagged you for. And you're hilarious. We can't wait to find out more about your web series and to follow your career and to just see what kind of new and exciting things you get into.
Thank you so much. I'm excited too. I'm so excited that you guys had me on, because you were like one of the first people to follow me on Twitter when Outlander began, and it was so cool to connect with you guys. And then you just supported me all along the way and supported Outlander all along the way, and I felt that support, and I appreciate it, and I'm so excited that this is finally happening.
So are we. I just got a tickle, too. So that's – it was awesome. It's just – it really means the world to us that you came on our show and talked to us. It was entertaining. I mean, we had a good time, and we hope our listeners – we think our listeners will be entertained as well and interested, but we just can't say thank you enough.
Well, it has been absolutely my pleasure. this interview, we could talk all night. We could break down every single male character to ever come on out there, according to level of hotness.
Oh, Lord. We should.
I would never get hired again.
That's going to be part two.
Whenever you join a TV show, you have to have a sexual harassment seminar.
Oh.
But they only ever send the men in power to do it and be like, hey, look, you can't make these jokes or whatever. And nobody really listens to it. But it's so funny because I think about it and I'm like, I would be so much trouble if I was either in a position of power on the show or if I was a man. I shouldn't be saying these things, but whatever. I don't work there anymore. We've established that. I'm good. I'm moving in on Martin Brody, guys.
Do it.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. That is your next life goal.
Yeah.
Besides the web series and meet Mr. Brody.
That should be your new web series. Finding my own Brody.
Oh, my
gosh. Finding Martin Brody.
No. There has to be a separate web series now called Finding Martin Brody. Oh my gosh.
I'm sorry.
That is too perfect.
Yeah.
Finding my gypsy. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
She just got chills. So I can feel it.
This is the beginning of my love story.
I know.
I'm so excited.
You guys were here for it.
That and the kitties.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Anna. You're funny. You're so entertaining. All of the stuff I've already said a million times.
She's just trying to get a second date out of this. I can see
Summer.
You got it. We'll give our cats a play date.
Summer, you're so embarrassing.
She's trying to get you to give her the rose.
Summer.
Like Bachelor.
You guys both get roses.
Yes.
Will you accept them?
I accept this rose.
Yay.
I guess. I mean, I'm not trying to leave anybody hanging, but I didn't watch a lot of Bachelor, so.
You don't have to have watched it to know about the rose ceremony.
Yeah.
I think I know about the ceremony.
Day if they give you a rose. That's all you need to know.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so pass?
Pass.
Okay. Sometimes things have to be explained in special ways. Okay, well, we will wish you a good night, and you and Zoe a very good night, and thank you again, and we hope in the future to chat with you again.
Thank you so much. I would love to. I'm sure we'll stay in touch over Twitter, and I hope people like this interview, and I didn't ramble too much about my cats.
No, I think...
Ginger has the corner on that.
Yeah, always.
The market on that.
Yes. Always. Always. On kitties, yep. Okay, well, you have a great night, and thank you so much.
Enjoy the rest of season 2, and then season 3 and 4.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yes, we will.
And hopefully endless seasons after that.
Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our Audio Boom channel is audioboom.com/channel/OutlanderPod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/OutlanderPod or email us at OutlanderPod@gmail.com.